Invent great rollers, and I'm in the Coast Guard. Here, video and at the cradle. You mind?
Welcome to Sea Views. Today, Adam and I are joined by Alan McCullough, and we are revisiting an episode that we did several episodes back, actually, last year on international fishing safety. So we're looking at that topic again, aren't we, Adam? So it's quite good to go back to this, isn't it?
Yeah, that was episode 5 back in October when we spoke with Cor Blanc, who told us that there's still a long way to go in terms of safety with the commercial fishing. And so it's really good to have Alan on today because of his new role, which I'm excited to learn more about.
So without further ado, welcome Alan McCullough. And Alan is the coordinator for the International Fund for Fishing Safety and working with Fish Platform. It was a project that's been long in the making and launched earlier this year from Fish Platform. Alan, lovely to have you on with us today to bring us up to date on what's been happening, because there's been quite a lot going on. Do you want to give me a little bit of an overview of where we are with this project?
Well, Julia, first of all, thanks for the invitation to be on here today. And it's good to see you and Adam again. So it's a real honor to be on the CVU podcast. So thanks for that. In terms of IFT, yeah, you were talking to Cor last October. That's less than 12 months ago. It's been a busy 12 months because, as I've been telling people, really, this time last year, IFT was still very much a concept. It was very much still in discussion. And agreement was reached towards the end of 2023. And IFT was formally launched at iFish 6 in Rome on the 8th of January this year. And then the team went trawling for a coordinator. And lo and behold, they found me. I took up the role effective on the 20th of March this year. I'm glad to report that within 2 months of that appointment, on the 9th of May, we awarded our first IFT grant. So it has been a hectic few months, but it has been a very positive few months, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's been fantastic to see progress already and actual solutions being funded right now.
It absolutely is. We had our latest grants panel meeting last week. I'm very happy to talk to you and Adam about how the process all works. But we approved another 5 applications last week. Now, you know, the funding, this pot of money has started off relatively low, but we have all great ambitions for the fund to grow the months and the years ahead. You know, the headline, Julia, Adam, that's in my head this morning is that so far this year we've committed £222,003, to be exact. The applicants tell me that those grant approvals will benefit 65,000 fishers around the world. And when I talk about around the world, Adam, these projects are in Ghana, in Kenya, in Thailand, in South Africa, in Vietnam, and in Fiji. So 65,000 beneficiaries around the world. Now, here's the punchline, Julia. When you divide £22,000 by 65,000 beneficiaries, it works out to £3.42 per beneficiary. That's what IFT have invested in those 65,000 people. £3.42 to train them, to provide essential safety equipment. The list goes on. Now, if you can bear with me, you two, because we can debate statistics and numbers all over the place, but, you know, the big impactful number, a tragic number, is that people tell me that there are upwards of 100,000 fishers who die every year in the world from accidents whilst they're harvesting fish and shellfish. 100,000. Now, on my very simple calculator, I've done the numbers. People tell me that also that there are 39 million fishers in the world. 39 million. That's about 85% of the global population of seafarers are fishers. So if my mathematics are right, and I take 39 million fishers and 100,000 fatalities, something like 0.256%, to be exact, of the global fishing community die every year from accidents at sea. And if I take that 0.256% and apply that to the 65,000 beneficiaries that BIF already has within 4 months, the last 4 months, that means that somewhere in the region of 166 of those fishers would be expected to die over the next 12 months. And the point here is that for an investment for each one of those lives, I would argue to save each one of those lives is costing if somewhere in the region of £3,500 each. So I think, guys, that's the point that I'm making. For an investment of £3,500 each, if arguably has saved 166 human lives over the next 12 months.
That is absolutely astounding. And I'm going to multiply that number by another one, which is the Dunbar number. And I tell everybody about this, and listeners to this will be bored of me talking about it, but there was a guy called Alan Dunbar who worked out that each human being knows about 150 other people. So your 166 people's lives saved equate to the wedge end, or just under 25,000 people whose lives aren't ruined by the loss of those fishes. That is an astounding amount of people's lives saved for, as you say, a very low investment. In fact, I am struggling to think of any. I mean, £3.50, you can't buy a cup of coffee in a European country for that sort of price. And you know, potentially that's saving lives. That's amazing. That's wow. I'm blown away by that.
You know, Adam, the old saying, and Judy will confirm this, but that behind every good man is a better woman. Now, I'm not saying that I'm a good man, but there is a better woman behind me. Actually, I was rehearsing some of those figures with my wife this morning. And it's the point, Adam, that you've just made. And my wife made it to me. She said, Alan, don't forget about the families. Don't forget about the communities. Don't forget about all of that. So that's why the Dunbar number, and Adam, I'll acknowledge it was you that introduced me to that equation a week ago. That's why it is important, very important. And I said, that's my argument. For the investment that IFS has made to date, listen to the numbers, chaps. And as I was speaking to another colleague this morning, and he listened to me about this, and he said, think about it, Alan. First of all, let's change the pound sign to a dollar sign for a moment or two. And let's just argue with people, potential donors, the big foundations, retailers, or the general public, whoever it might be, that if they just give $1 for every fisher that there is in the world, and we set the goal of having $39 million in the kitty over the next few years, imagine the impact that we would make.
Wow. I mean, especially that you're absolutely right. I'm blown away by this. And actually, this is a really good point to talk about, you know, the money, because, you know, they always say follow the money. So you've invested just over 200,000. You've got a pot, clearly. So the question, I guess, is where is the money coming from, and where should the money be coming from in the future? Where are you looking for it?
Well, it's another good question, Adam. And the background to IFS is a partnership. And we have at the minute three founding partners. And the three founding partners are, first of all, the Seafarers Charity, who bring with them all of the experience that they have administering grants over what is it now, 100 plus years. So that's an essential part of the team. The second essential part of the team are the men and women in the FISH platform, the Fishing Industry Safety and Health platform. And they are over 100 people from 30 plus countries around the world who specialise and who are passionate about the safety of fishers around the world. So they bring the expertise to the table. And finally, but by no means least, you have Lloyd's Registry Foundation. And they're the people that have brought the cash to the table. They are people that, along with the Seafarers and the FISH platform, have grasped the vision and put the money on the table. So we are clearly indebted to LRF for setting this fund up. The challenge then goes out to other funders, other foundations, retailers, processors, industry partners to join the campaign, And in many cases, I'll be blunt about it, Adam, put their money where their mouths are and let's invest in the human lives that we're talking about. And again, my career has been in the seafood industry. My father was a fisherman. My wife's family are fishermen. It's the fishing industry in Northern Ireland that provided me with a career for over the past 30 years. And a big part of that career, especially more recently, has been focused on the issue of sustainable fisheries, which is important. If we don't have sustainable fish stock, well, we can go home in many ways. But equally, if not more important, if we don't have fishers around the world to harvest the sustainable fish stock, then you and me, Adam and Julia, are not going to be able to eat it. So I think in my previous career about even the amount of money that was invested in proving that the fish stocks were sustainable. All sorts of accreditations out there to show that we were fishing the seas sustainably. And then I think, Adam, how much money did we invest in the humans that's involved in this process? And let's be frank about it, there's no equivalent. There's no equivalent. We're investing much, much more to prove that a fish or a shellfish is caught sustainably than we are investing in the lives of the human. And as much as I totally understand and respect the issues about sustainable fisheries, I conclude that there's simply something wrong when we devalue the human element of this.
Well, you know, you're pushing against an open door, especially with me and Chirp and human factors. For me, it's all about the humans. And of course, it isn't either or. It isn't putting the money into the fish or the people. It's putting the money into the fish and the people. So that's a really key point.
You get, I don't know whether it was you or somebody else said to me when we met a few months ago, you know, the two of them are mutually linked. Because at the end of the day, if we have sustainable fisheries, that's biologically sustainable, economically sustainable, then that means that ultimately fishing vessel owners have more money in their pockets to invest in the safety and the health and the welfare of their crew, and everybody wins.
Sounds like you're at the beginning of a really interesting journey with IFS and with those sorts of returns on investment, if I can use such a crude term when we're talking about people, equivalent to about $5 a person in your first 65,000 people, just for the international audience. That's an amazing thing.
Yeah. The other thing I've been really amazed at is having looked at a little bit about some of these projects that are coming up, and hopefully you can tell us more about that, Alan, because you're so involved in it. But because they are developed by experts in their own countries, it looks like some of these projects are really delivering a lot for very good value, aren't they?
Oh my goodness, there's such a range, Julia. You know, as an Althea project, I'll make this point. IFS has effectively been designed by fishers for fishers. At all times, the focus is fishers. This isn't some high-level group of experts who have just parachuted into this subject and basically said there'll be peace over the world. This is fishers working for fishers. It is a fisher fund, first, foremost, and always, that's been supported by the good people in LRF and the Seafarers Charity and every place else. And I use that term fisher specifically. It's not about big boats. It's not about small boats. It's not about red, blue, black, or green boats. It is about the fisher. Regardless of what sort of a boat they serve on, Julia, regardless of the size of the boat, it is about the fisher. So that's why it's one of the things that's been interesting about me to see the applications coming in, and it might be from a group who are involved in what we call a bigger boat, or it might be from somebody else who's called a smaller boat. And then, as you guys will be aware, you get into the whole debate, well, what do you define as a small-scale fisher or an artisanal fisher? And everybody across the world has a different definition, and you just get totally lost in all of this. The point, it's not about big boats or small boats, it's about fishers. It's about guys in Ghana who have been displaced from inshore fishing grounds into offshore fishing grounds, where immediately they're competing with larger industrial trawlers or indeed fishing in the midst of gas production fields. Fishing in the midst of a gas production field with a naked flame to attract small fish to the surface. It's about the guys in South Africa and Namibia, where the headlines in the spring of this year were about big trawlers that had been lost with lives lost. And it's about ensuring that fisheries management codes, fishing vessel management codes, are properly applied in that case. It's about working amongst migrant fishers in Thailand from inland countries like Laos, Burma, like Cambodia, and people who have maybe been displaced, who are coming into countries like Thailand, who are seeking work, who secure work on board fishing vessels, but again, don't have the experience and don't have the training. It's about delivering basic training to people like that. Moving into Vietnam, it's about fishers there who are targeting tuna, for example. Not just ensuring that they have adequate safety equipment, but applying new and novel ideas that, if successful, can then be replicated right around the world. And that's an important element out of these projects as we develop them with the applicant, as we approve them, that we make sure that if they're successful, that we can lift the lessons that's learned, be it in Kenya or in Fiji or wherever we're at, and then talk to other applicants and hopefully use them to apply good lessons elsewhere.
Yeah, that is absolutely brilliant, isn't it? That projects and initiatives and solutions can start off quite small scale. They need the funding, they need some help to get started and get going. But some of these are going to have applications potentially worldwide.
Well, absolutely. And that is another central core of the process, that as we initially might engage with an applicant. And there's several examples coming to my mind, Julia. You have maybe two applicants coming forward in the same country looking to address the same problem. It's a very positive position to be in, to actually encourage these applicants to form a partnership and join their respective skills together, the result of which then is an even more powerful application. And that has happened in some of these cases. And there's absolutely no doubt that what is a challenge off the coast of Ghana today, with small inshore fishers being displaced because of competition in the sea space. And we all know about competition around the UK that our own fishers are facing from offshore wind farms, the carbon issues, all sorts of things are coming down the track. So lessons that can even today be learned in Ghana, who knows, there could be lessons that's applied here in the UK going forward.
And that's really powerful. So let's talk about that for a moment. So your role isn't, I guess, simply to receive bids for funding and to give that funding out and to monitor it and all the good stuff that you'll do, but it's also to act as that information exchange. Or if not you, then I'm guessing there is somebody else that does that. So let's talk about that.
As I keep saying to people, Adam, it's very easy for me to be on the front line and I'm engaging with somebody in another part of the world and their application is successful and you send them an email to tell them so and they're coming back with an email to me saying, Alan, we're so grateful, we're so thankful. It's very nice to hear that, Adam. I'm not undermining that in any way, but I'm the pretty face, which you can't see on a podcast clearly, Julia. I'm the face of it and it's the team behind me. I'll repeat it again, it's LRF who have come up with the money. Anybody listening to this who has more contacts with foundations, please, guys, we need your support. It's the Seafarers Charity with all their administrative expertise, and it's the Fish Platform. In many ways, Adam, when I engage with an applicant wherever in the world, they come to me with an idea. I'll admit, I don't have the technical expertise to say yes, no, or whatever. So I can take that application, go to the People in Fish Platform, they provide me with the advice, and then I go back to the applicant, and together we will apply that advice and mould the application accordingly.
Wow, very powerful.
Yeah, it is.
So the Fish Platform, as you said, I think you said people from 30 different countries?
Yes.
So you're getting a truly global perspective. So this isn't, and I can say this because we are all Northwestern Europeans, this isn't the European solution to a global problem. This is a global solution to a global problem.
No, I don't think I would make a great parachutist, Adam. So this isn't about me parachuting into parts of Africa, Asia, Latin America, or any place else. This is about trying to deliver to people on the ground. And it's one of the powerful elements of the Fish Platform that they have experts in Africa, in the Far East, yes, in Europe and in North America too. And we're working into Latin America as we speak. So you can call on these global experts to say, well, look, okay, you know the place. You're on the ground. You're the foots on the ground in this part of the world. What's your opinion? It is not about people from Northwest Europe coming in and saying, we're going to fix your problem. It has to be a local problem developed by local fishers, first and foremost, with local expertise.
Perfect.
Yeah, I think that's what's making it so powerful. It's amazing, really, after like less than a year that these projects are already funded and underway. But you've got other applications. What else might be coming in the future?
Well, yes. Like, it's the old saying, Julia, success breeds success. And even over the past week, sometimes I wonder, are these people all talking to one another? Because no sooner than we had the Grants Panel meeting out of the way last week, than there was a deluge of emails come in from places like India, from Indonesia, would be in contacts in Latin America, inquiring about what was possible. Success literally does bring success. And in this case, it can be, it will be a tremendous success, because I come back to this number, Julia, that if I can argue that there's been 65,000 beneficiaries so far with what is a relatively low amount of investment, and we can argue that of that 65,000, that we've already saved 166 lives, what more can we do? What more can we do? We have ambitions for the fund. We need to grow the fund. We are indebted to LRF for putting that, I call it seed money, in place. But guys, let's get a move on now and let's fulfill the ambitions.
Yeah, exciting times. And maybe also anyone who's working in their own countries and has a good Fisher network, they should spread this word around, because if there's a project trying to get off the ground that's got a great idea, you want to hear about it, don't you?
We want to hear about it, Julia. I'll come back, just you put the seed in my mind, like the whole issue about sustainable fisheries. You know, we've engaged with so many people over the past few months. And there's one example just ringing around in my head, and I'm not going to go into the specifics, but it was about a potential project. It was about a real project in the Indian Ocean. And it was a project that was focused on stunning fish as they came on board a boat. It was a pilot project. And to be quite honest, my ignorance, Julia, I was a bit puzzled as to how a project that was focused on stunning fish might be related to the safety of the fishers. But we go into the conversation and it was explained, they explained it to me what the safety angle was. And okay, I can get it. But as part of the conversation, these were people who, and I'm going to be honest, were more, again, interested in the welfare of the fish than they were in the welfare of the human. But as a result of the conversation, yes, they set seeds in my mind. But I also like to think, Julia, that I set a wee seed in their mind where, guys, I'm sorry, this is just me, but the welfare and the safety of the human has to be equal to, if not more important than the fish. That's the bottom line.
And that it is the bottom line. And let's just take this wider than just commercial fishing at the moment, because, you know, that's actually what we see. Lots of people in lots of different maritime industries are really focused on the output or the outcomes. And actually, the seafarers are taken for granted, or in this case, the fishers. But actually, without them, as you said earlier, you don't have any fish.
Adam, we all do it. You and Julia and I do it. I was in Dublin yesterday. I was taken to a very nice restaurant where we had seafood. I'm not going to go into the specifics of where the seafood was from, but you know that what accompanies menus in many of these cases is a little bit of blurb around how the fish was captured, where it was captured, if it comes from a sustainable source. And again, it's a common that not once in terms of that blurb, not once is actually the name Fisher or fisherman or fisherwoman or human mentioned. That human element is missing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in my simple mind, there's something wrong.
Yeah, well, like I said earlier, you're pushing against an open door with that one. So I guess we ought to talk about how do people contribute to this fund?
Follow the link and press the donate button. That's the simple word. That's the simple way. Forgive me, that's meant as it sounded, a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Adam, to come back to your question, how do we donate? For those that are listening in the big philanthropic organisations, foundations, for those that are listening from seafood companies in the UK, in Europe and elsewhere, please, guys, think about this. This is ifs rattling the tin. This is me rattling the tin. There is a major issue that, as far as I'm concerned, for too long, and I speak as a former industry representative, has been swept under the carpet. It has been swept under the carpet. So please, if you agree with me that a human life is at least equal to in importance as the life of a fish or a shellfish, then come and speak to me, please.
Your door and your email is always opened.
247365.
Yeah, and you know, I was going to say it's even wider than just those audiences that you've talked about, because I was looking at new cars the other week and the salesman, he said to me, of course, the carpets are made out of recycled fishing net because, you know, we're a sustainable company. And of course, having been an ex-harbourmaster of a fishing port, I thought to myself, you've probably got this free as well,
yep,
because you've saved the harbour, the landfill costs or the waste disposal costs. Of course, you're going to use the free material. But again, to go back to the point you just eloquently made, what they didn't say was something like, oh yeah, so as a result, we're putting X amount a year into a seafaring charity or a fishing charity. So actually, I would suggest perhaps your filter is even wider than the people you just initially mentioned.
You're spot on, Adam. If anybody follows the LinkedIn profiles, and I've been encouraged over the last few months to resurrect my LinkedIn profile, I was reading, and I then shared it on LinkedIn last week, an article from the BBC. And again, it was well up the list of articles on the BBC's webpage. And I hope we can mention BBC, Julie.
Oh, yes.
The point there was, wow, look at the cost of a fish and chips in the UK now. And how has it got to this level? And of course, there was commentary underneath. Well, the price of potatoes has gone up. And then there's a 35% tariff on the import of seafood from certain parts of the world that we've fallen out with right now. And, you know, you read all of that, and it was the point that I made on the post, Adam, that, again, we'll talk about the price of potatoes, which implies, well, what the farmer's getting for his potatoes. But where in that article did anybody debate about actually what the fisher's been paid at the end of the day? For some reason, nobody wants to talk about that. It's a dirty thing to mention. And it's the point being that if the fisher is paid a wage that reflects the hours, the work, and everything else they have to do, they could invest more. And I'm not just talking about fishers in the UK. I'm talking about anybody from a harbour in the southwest of England to a beach in Indonesia. But if those guys got paid a wage that reflects what they do, then they could be investing in the safety of their own lives.
Do you know, it's when you talked about that article, what came to mind, and this will not be a cultural reference that many people that listen to this in other countries will get, so I apologise in advance, but there's a British comedian called Jack D who once did a sketch about somebody moaning about the cost of a postage stamp. And he said, okay, then I'll tell you what, you deliver it for 28p. Off you go then. And it's the same thing. Yeah, your fish and chips is expensive. Go and catch it yourself. Go and make it yourself. Then find out how expensive it is.
It applies to the shrimp fishery in the Gulf of Mexico that I visited at the beginning of last year. It literally applies to the guy who's pushing a canoe off the beach in Indonesia. It applies to that fisher who's working on a Chinese trawler in Fiji. It applies to the fisher who's working off a canoe in the middle of a gas field somewhere off the coast of Ghana. It applies.
Yeah.
Well, I really like that perspective. I think it's turning some statistics into something much more than that and actually putting it in perspective and thinking about the actual people, the 39 million people. You do have an opportunity now, Alan, to change the world. We let every guest have a final question, and you can tell me what is the one thing that you would change to improve fisher safety if you could change one thing?
Oh my goodness, Julia, you put me on the spotlight now. I'm not going to answer your question because I think we've started, Julia. I think the question has been, I don't think that the question has started to be answered. And again, I'll just make the point that hats off to Fish Platform, hats off to the Seafarers Charity, and hats off to Lloyd's Register Foundation, because after much debate, and sometimes as I understand it, Julia, and I wasn't subject to a lot of that debate, it was agonising. It might have been painful, but they have taken the step. They've taken the step to launch IFS. IFS is not about me, it's about the fishers on the ground. So I'm not answering your question, Julia, with a direct answer, because I think we've begun the process of answering it with IPS. And like, let's be honest about it, Julia. You were involved in the early days of the discussion. You know what's going on, so you contributed to the story as well. Adam's very familiar with it as an ex-harbour master, given his involvement in CHIRP extending into the field of reporting from fishers. You guys have been at this longer than I have. So in many ways, thanks to you, your question, Julia, is now starting to be answered.
Brilliant. Why did I trust you to come up with something totally different there, Alan?
I should have been a politician, Julia.
No, I like it.
I
So thank you so much for joining us. That has been absolutely insightful. We're really excited about what's coming up as well and what's already started.
I really appreciate again, Julia and Adam, the opportunity to be on the podcast today. Like, I've heard so much about these podcasts. I have listened. For me to be here today has been a real pleasure and a real honour. So thank you very much for having me.
No, thank you.
So we're leaving the bridge now. Thank you, Alan.
And